In the Triad of North Carolina, where Emerald Hills roll, the Sharp Loan Team is on a mission to achieve housing goals. With St. Patrick's Day coming, it's a time of luck and cheer. Let's seize the moment and make your dream home appear. Like a pot of gold at Rainbow's End, your perfect house awaits. You'll need a pre-approval to have better rates. In the fields of Winston-Salem, where four-leaf clovers grow, we'll guide you through the process, keeping you in the know. This March, when it's warmer and luck and magic fill the air, your home sweet home is waiting for your tender, loving care. So don't delay, reach out today and let's embark on this quest with luck and expertise. We'll ensure you're truly blessed. Together, we'll find your treasure at Rainbow's shining end. With the Sharp Loan Team, you'll always have a friend.
Welcome to the What's Up with the Slash podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Desai.
Welcome to the third podcast, and I'm excited to have another special guest with me today. His name is Tyler Nail. I was looking at my emails to see when you first came to Aperture, and I don't know if you know it, but it was in February of 2016, almost 8 years to today.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that weird, though?
Yeah, that is weird.
8 years is a really long time.
That is a really long time. Yeah, in my head, I had it as seven. So I'm a little, I guess you're right.
You're off a year.
I'm off a year, yeah. Maybe I was excluding one for the gap year. But yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a very formative time for me.
It's like half of Aperture's life.
Yeah.
More than half of it. But maybe you should tell people about yourself before we get too far along.
Sure. Well, I am from here in Winston-Salem. I guess started my individuality as like an adult, as an artist here in town, as a musician. That's been my main focus since I was like 19. And I kind of played all over the city for a lot of years. And I've done a lot of things, been involved in a lot of arts. I've written, I've done journalism for local publications, and I've been involved in like an assortment of arts projects. And in, I don't know, around, I guess, 2016, when my touring trio was disbanding, I was like, well, I'm going to have to get a job and chill out for a while and kind of focus on paying rent and doing a normal life thing. And I had it narrowed down to very few places in town that I really wanted to work at. And Aperture was at the top of that list. And then I emailed and then got a response. And then it was like, suddenly I worked here. It was like the easiest getting of a job I could have imagined at the time.
Yeah, I read back to the, it was a very formal email that you sent, which now 8 years later, I'm like, oh, that was the email that we got. But yeah, I read, one of the responses was like, you caught us at a really good time. We're hiring at the moment. And yeah, really, I'm a big believer in serendipity, and like timing is everything. And so I'm glad that you sent that email 8 years ago.
No kidding. It has been a really interesting 8 years. It's been a dynamic 8 years.
Yeah, you've sort of been a jack of all trades. You've done a lot of different things.
Yeah, sure enough. I started as a general staff member. I remember early on being kind of thrown into a festival situation and having to just run the concession stand. And you, like, I don't think I ever told you this, but I had no idea what anything was. I didn't know what people would ask for, like a cab sab. Had no idea what they were saying. And so I would just have to stand there frozen for a while and be like, can you please explain to me what you're talking about? And then as time went on, yeah, started like learning things, became a shift leader. And then when the management position opened up, became the theater manager. And I guess at first operations manager and then theater manager. And then now overseeing media production, as well as I have been doing A-Mobile for a few years. So yeah, I've done quite a few tasks around here.
And it's much appreciated, your versatility, because You can't find that in everybody.
I've tried. I've learned a lot along the way.
Well, I hope so. The reason that I'm having you on, though, is because you're the you are the reason that this podcast is actually happening, because I alluded to it, I think, in my introduction, but I've been talking about it for a year, and you have your own podcast, and you've done it, and you've, you know, taught me what to do. So I thought it was very important to have you on one of the first episodes.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I guess I didn't really throw that into the introduction, but I guess, since I was a full-time artist, you know, I've started working full-time here, and this is what really gave my life a lot of stability to explore other artistic interests, including, I too had this idea of a podcast kind of sitting with me for a long time. Years ago, I had approached it like a YouTube channel that I wanted to do from my home studio, and we put out, I guess, like 6 or something episodes of this YouTube channel, and people really liked it, but I didn't have the discipline at the time to like stay on top of that. So then like years go by, finally, after a long time, I thought it's time for me to revisit this thing. So I started this podcast called Red House, and yeah, same situation. It was just, I dove into it kind of feeling like it was a bucket list kind of item that I just knew I wanted to do. Wasn't really sure how to cut my teeth doing it, so I just started messing with it until it started to make sense. So yeah, I was happy to, when you said that you wanted to do the same with this, I was happy to share that, because I'm a firm believer, I guess, in the sort of interesting power that podcasts have in engaging people and just being a cool space, like a much cooler space than most, like, most content media structures, because it's so conversational, transparent, and kind of free-spirited.
It feels really honest.
Like, yeah.
I went back and listened to your introduction episode. Have you gone back and like listened to that recently?
Not recently.
Well, I listened to it today, and it feels very similar to my introduction episode. And I didn't watch yours until now, so it has no influence on mine, but it's very similar to what I talked about, and you talk about what you want for the podcast, and you talk about like being vulnerable and being honest, and it was kind of nice. It was like, "Huh?" Like, that's kind of what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should go back and watch it. Because you talk about things that you want to do. You talk about, it's really funny, you talk about wanting to have somebody come on with like a bow and arrow, like talking about, do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
Did that ever happen?
It hasn't happened. I've asked the guy quite a few times, because I've got a local friend of mine who's a musician as well as one of these guys that's just like really into survival skills and stuff. He makes bows and arrows. And I think at the time I thought, Red House could be, in addition to being this podcast space, it might include some more like YouTube-oriented YouTube culture stuff. So I thought that would be fun, but no, haven't had him on yet.
Maybe if you don't have him on, I'll have to have him on.
Yeah.
What's up with the slash?
You definitely should.
I'll have to figure out how that works into like the storyline.
But next time they make a Robin Hood movie, maybe sure. You can have him on.
Or if we share the Hunger Games or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna put that in there on the possibility list. You've done a podcast for 2 years. I'm just starting out. What do you feel like are the lessons that you learned? If you could tell me like 2 or 3 things that you wish you might have known starting out, or that you are glad that you learned. I Googled like, what should I ask a podcast guest today? And there were some really stupid things.
Oh, yeah.
I hope that's not a stupid question that I just asked you.
Maybe we'll get to some good ones, but or maybe we'll get to visit some of those.
I mean, if you want to talk about what your morning routine is, like that was one of the questions.
That would not interest you, I think, right now. It's a little boring. Yeah. In terms of learning things, I guess as I heard the question coming out, one thing that came to mind was, I think I was really committed to my own, this is going to sound like I'm saying the other thing as I start it, but I was very committed to my own ideas for what would make the podcast entertaining for people at first. And over time, I had to accept the many, many people who were telling me that a 2-hour-plus podcast might be too much for them to be able to keep up with. Things like that. I was like modeling my attitude after like some of the podcasts that I listen to who don't mind that stuff. But I think over time I started to be like, well, yeah, maybe it's a little bit worth it to just really pay attention to my audience, to pay attention to like what they're telling me their feedback is and stuff, instead of seeing this as just another space. Because I'll contextualize that by saying, within my art as a musician, I really don't care at all. Like, I really don't give any mind at all to the idea of what audiences might expect. And I think I tried to have that same attitude with the podcast, but I think over time I adjusted that to where I've started to care more, I think, about the way that the podcast lands with those who listen to it.
When the weather warms up, so does the real estate market. Sounds obvious, right? It's true. Spring typically means more home sales. But how will the current interest rates affect people's decisions? What about inventory? Is it high or low? And does that benefit the buyer or the seller? And how do those factors take into account a certain price point or area of the triad? Now it's not so obvious, is it? That's why you should turn to the Ginther Group to make sense of it all. You need someone you can rely on to assess your situation, read the data and trends, and steer you in the right direction. Interest rates, inventory, even new construction. There are so many factors that impact our local market. And you should get your information from the folks right here in our backyard. Contact Blake Ginther and the Ginther Group today, 336-283-8689, or visit theginthergroup.com. Buying, selling, investing, or just learning, whatever you need, start now. And like me, you can become a Ginther Group client for life.
Okay, so I need to be able to hear what my audience is telling me. And how do they tell you that? Do they write on YouTube? Do they message you? Like, how do people need to tell me what I need to know?
Yeah, some of that engagement's fine. Like, interaction through social media is all good. The occasions that come to mind for me are actually just conversations I've had with close friends who make it a point, or were making it a point at some point, to keep up with the podcast. But they would say, one friend in particular who would say, I'm trying to watch all of your episodes. I'm trying to make sure I see all of them, but it is hard to commit like 2 hours every Monday, especially if it's more than 2 hours. It's just hard to commit that much of my time when I've got, you know, a Monday to deal with. Conversations like that, and I'm sure with yours being like a kind of, like mine is, like a locally accessible, and you being a locally accessible person, I'm sure that you'll have friends listen to it and tell you what they think of it and how it lands with them and stuff.
Yes, but they do not have to worry. I will not be having a 2-hour podcast because I need people to come see films for 2 hours.
Exactly.
Not listen to me talk for 2 hours.
That's a good point.
So anything else, like any other, like what do you do? I remember you talking to me about like you've had some guests that just were not good guests. Like what do you do about that?
That's so hard because you've already invited them onto the thing. They expect to see the thing. They expect for their episode to go up. And it's not like you can, at the end of the night, tell it just, it's not like you want, or at least me being a somewhat agreeable person and like polite person, I don't want to be like, man, that episode really is going to be horrible. And like, I'm not proud of that at all. And sometimes that might be how you feel or whatever. That's just one of those risks that I think you take when you're doing this. And I think the other thing that came to mind, and maybe this ties into it pretty well, is vetting and preparing for guests. Vetting guests and preparing for guests is probably a good idea. I notoriously do not do like any work, any prep work with any of my guests. I hardly sit down at all and like prepare them for it. I just kind of jump in and I just let the conversation flow as naturally as possible. For most guests, I would say that that's okay because it's like really easy to have an organic conversation. But every once in a while, it doesn't work. And in those cases, I wish I would have kind of sat down with them beforehand and said, let's make sure that we have at least 5 or so interesting things that we can pull from to talk about that you'll be excited to talk about if we need to find something, if the conversation maybe isn't flowing to a more organic place.
Yeah, we did no prep for this one.
Yeah.
I did send you a text about one thing I wanted to ask you about because yes, I felt like you needed to have time to think about that.
Yeah, and luckily you and I have 8 years of rapport, so it's not, I don't think it's quite as difficult.
Man, but I'm not looking forward to having an awkward guest. Like, I could just say that I, you know, because I'm recording this myself, that something happened with the recorder and didn't get there. Yeah. Didn't get their mic.
Yeah, you could do that.
I mean,
there's sneakier tricks to pull. Yeah, you could totally do that. And even if you don't involve them in it, maybe just having like your own backup questions or segments to rely on in case you feel like the conversation isn't going anywhere. Maybe that's
like,
a good
what
trick.
Is your morning routine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'll keep that. There were like 85 questions on this website that I found. So I'll pull from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about your time at Aperture. We don't talk a lot about like the past here and your experiences here, but I mean, can you talk a little bit about things that I might not know that you think about Aperture and things that happened that you never told me about or behind the scenes? I mean, because, you know, you were working with staff more. I'm in the office. Mm. You have probably more stories, you know. Whew. Give me some scoop, Tyler.
Oh, man. You know, so much of it involves my experience, which is like so narrow and, you know, and focused on like, because I, like I said, came on at the entry level position here. And I did see Aperture just change so much over the course of a few years. And I kind of climbed Aperture through that time, you know, to a different place.
Because you were with the change, like you were wanting to do changes and see things happen, and there were people that didn't want to.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when I got to Aperture, I think honestly the feeling among staff was it was just what I noticed immediately was it was eerily silent, and people were very. It wasn't like a group of people working together. It was like a whole bunch of individuals like keeping their distance from each other. And I don't know if this is just like a narcissistic thing of giving myself a particular amount of credit, but I came in feeling like I might be the only extroverted person that works here. And this is interesting. And I sort of did my usual thing of how I relate to people and make friends and stuff. And I started to see kind of friendly personalities start to come out more. Now, of course, like there were already people who worked here who were friends with each other. There were people who were like more outgoing or whatever. It's not like everybody was a robot, but I think that around that time, for some reason, with me here and with a couple of other people that worked here, new friendships and like a broader friend group started to be born. And that was, I guess, one of the secrets that you might know about, but yeah, that was like as that friend group was like really being formed, that was when Snapchat was like a real...
What was it called again? There was another name. It was
called Snaperture.
Snaperture.
We had a group on Snapchat called Snaperture.
And then I asked to join, and then it dissolved because I don't think people really wanted me on there. That made me really sad.
Well, I think what you didn't know was Snaperture was sort of this... I think weird outlet for everyone, kind of like, you know, when people work in restaurants, there's like that scene in that movie Waiting where that girl comes around the corner, like she's in the kitchen just angry and yelling and bitter, but she comes around the corner and when she gets to the table, she's got her waitress face on and she's all nice and polite. And I think Snaperture was our place where we just kind of expressed everything that was negative or hilarious, not just like about Aperture, but the things that we felt that we couldn't really like express in our usual space, in our usual role as employees.
Yeah, it's all the things about work life that, you know.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah. But it was like off the chain. It was kind of crazy.
I know. You did have to rein it in.
Yeah.
It was probably good that it went south.
Yeah. It probably was for the best because we... And not to mention, honestly, I would have days off and I would be at home and Snaperture would just be blowing up. Like, we talked to each other on there all the time. Our whole staff of like 11 people at the time or whatever, we were just, it felt like it was our top priority of the day. Like, it was our main friend group.
I like for staff to take photos for me to use on social media, and they were doing all the photos on Snaperture and not getting any photos for me, and so then I was a little jealous of Snaperture.
yeah that was one of the things. I also remember, I mean, we there was a totally different team here at the time, and I know that at the and I'm it's it always is the case that people, it's not easy to always get staff to cooperate, I guess, with leadership and stuff in these types of roles. I do think we cultivated something like that over time. I think we and I get the impression I get is that you have more of that now than we did at the time.
And I think a lot of that was you wanting to do that and setting up the framework that now we can continue to do that. It was important, and I think there were reasons that we did it. And now I think our staff, when we hire people, it's much easier to find good fits and to keep that legacy going.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you – my attitude when I was, like, hiring people was to define all that stuff from the beginning and to make sure that that was, like, something they bought into early on and kind of understood, like – and I, all of those interviews when we were kind of going through this massive shift, I told them about hardships that we had had as a team and stuff and said, this is the kind of culture that we're trying to build here. And so if you're going to come here, this is kind of what we want you to buy into and be a part of. And I think that was important. But yeah, when I first got to Aperture, I think that there felt like a great division between like the people that I knew and was working with on a daily basis versus like the people who like were managing at the time or whatever. It didn't feel quite as much like a unified thing. Of course, Aperture also at the time wasn't a nonprofit yet. There was all kinds of other structural development that hadn't taken place yet that later came that I think opened a lot of doors as well.
There are hard times with staff. I mean, it's like staffing is always one of the hardest things because you're dealing with people. For us, it's a lot of part-time positions and students, and it's constantly changing. And you can have one person that comes in and they can be turn out to be not great, and that can impact the whole operations and everybody. And
which happened a lot, actually. And like that's
it still
where
happens, Tyler.
I'm sure it does.
It's never ending.
Yeah,
I've gotten more used to it, but it's a constant.
I couldn't even begin to get into some of the really interesting internal dramas that took place while I was here. It was very soap opera like, but when you have that dynamic of a group of people involved in, you know, especially in a small organization where people really can know everybody, people can really all be a part of each other's lives in this within the confines of this place. Yeah, it's bound to be a little bit interesting, and it always was.
It's probably good that I'm somewhat distanced from the soap opera drama. I don't have a lot of time for that.
I think too that I guess one thing that comes to mind, I'm running through the memories. One detail that might be fun to ask you about is like I know for staff a lot of the time there was this desire to take advantage of this space. There was this like, hey, we work at a movie theater. What if on Friday nights or whatever? What if on Wednesday nights we meet at Aperture at like 10 p.m. and watch like, I don't know, Ghostbusters or something? And you were always good about kind of like orienting our attention toward, like, you know, there's a way to take advantage of the theater here by like that in a way that actually benefits us as an organization. You could like watch the movies we're showing or something instead.
That was like a novel idea.
Yeah. But staff was always like, what the, why? Like, why can't we just be like kids and like, you know, watch whatever movie we want? But I don't know. What was your impression of that? Did it always feel like you were having to draw our attention back into like the job that we had?
No, I mean, I appreciate and understand because what I love about my job the most is the programming side and picking the films. So there was a part of that, you know, staff just wanted to be able to decide sometimes those things and pick films. And I understood it. At the same time, it's like I'm cool with that. But also it's really helpful when you do see films that we're showing and then you go and talk about them with your friends. And can it be both of those things? The current staff really – for the past couple of years, our holiday party, they just want to get together at Aperture and then stay and watch a movie. So we do it.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, staff sees a lot more. They come see films.
That's good.
It's great. I love it. I'm like, I don't know why you don't want to see films if you're working at a cinema.
Yeah. That's why I started working here.
I mean, it was always like, I don't know. I guess you really just see this as a job, and you're sometimes not here because it's an interest. You know, I don't, it's, and we still have some of those on staff, and they're great, but I love it when people are as passionate about cinema as I am.
Well, I'm sure that there are other secrets I could dig up. I don't know.
Maybe for the 2-hour podcast we have one day.
Yeah.
So the question I asked Tyler to prepare for, I get asked all the time, what's my favorite film? And I'm sure you get asked all the time, like, what's your favorite song as a musician? So I'm just going to ask you what your favorite song from a film is.
For many years. For better or worse, one of my favorite movies has been Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise and Penelope Cruz, Cameron Diaz. And one of my favorite uses of a song, it's not a song I love. It does happen to be in a movie I love, but in this really horrible scene where a really tragic twist takes place, that results in like the absolute worst version of the end of a relationship that you could imagine. This song, Can We Still Be Friends, starts playing. And, you know, it's like, I think it's like an early 90s sort of.
Who sings the song?
Cheesy ballad. Who does sing the song? It's by Todd Rundgren.
Oh my God, my dad loved Todd Rundgren.
Yeah.
That's so weird. I wonder if he knows of the song.
I mean, I knew the song before I knew the movie or whatever. It's like, it's a kind of, it's one of those hit songs that you can recognize. It's probably been commercialized or whatever. But it's so ill-placed in the movie. And for some reason, it works so well because it's such a serious, tragic moment. And the song just throws the mood in the most pleasant way. So I'd have to say it's one of, I think, the most creative uses for like such a weird mood song.
It's time to get serious about your financial future. It's never too early, but it could be too late to get started. And that's oftentimes the hardest part, getting started. How much do I save? Where do I invest? Do I save for college or retirement? How much for each? And who do I talk to about it all? Okay, we'll keep things simple for now and help you answer the last one. We recommend you begin with a local financial advisor. And that's Jennifer Johnson of Three Magnolias Financial Advisors. She'll sit down with you for a complimentary introductory consultation and go over all of your questions. Get started on the path to achieving your financial goals. Visit threemagnoliasfinancialadvisors.com or call 336-701-1600. Get comfortable with your financial future. Three Magnolias Financial Advisors, retirement, financial planning, and investments. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Three Magnolias Financial Advisors. Three Magnolias Financial Advisors and Cetera Advisor Networks are not affiliated. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity.
And we don't know the legality of me playing the clip from the Rundgren song.
Right. Yeah, but maybe.
So maybe I can insert it here, maybe not. I'll have to Google that.
And I bet if you change the speed of the song by like 1%, then you could probably get away with it without them finding out.
Okay, well, we'll see. It'll either be here or it won't be.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a sucker for like a good placement of a song. I'm sure that I do have a sensitivity for scores, like original scores. But I think I really like when they can, I really like when somebody can like place a well-known song in a way that brings it to life in this really cool way.
Well, but it can elevate a scene. Like it can really change a scene.
Oh yeah. Like, I guess another that comes to mind, Gatsby. I don't know how do you feel about the newest Gatsby movie?
I watched it again recently. Visually, it's really cool. And man, don't you want to like go to one of those parties?
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I'm just so in love with the way that they used a lot of Jay-Z stuff with this sort of 20s tempo some of the time, kind of blending back and forth between hip hop feels and like Charleston feels, but all the visuals are from the 20s. So you're kind of seeing this presentation of the 20s with this very modern expression of how we party now or whatever. And yeah. I really love that.
I like when the music is not what you typically would expect from mm-hmm. like a period piece. There's a film called Corsage that we showed last year that's a period piece, and they use contemporary music. It elevates the film rather than a traditional sort of orchestral score, which you would expect a period piece to have. It just makes you see it in a different way.
Exactly.
Really well done.
Which I think that's a good way to describe, I think, the effect that it has in Gatsby as well. It's just, it's an unexpected blend. Should I ask you the same? Do you have one that comes to mind for you?
Oh, Tyler, I didn't prepare for that. Let me think on it. What I was about to say before you asked that was, when you place a good song in a film, to me, it's an example of why I think film is one of the best art forms, because people take for granted every single element that goes into a film, one of which is the soundtrack and placing songs.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements. Lighting is one that, when it really shines through, that you realize how impactful it can be.
I end the podcast with talking about something on my desk, and I was going to ask you to pick out. It cannot be Barbie, and it cannot be the popcorn, because I've already talked about those things.
Oh, this is good.
But you can ask me about anything. And I clean my desk.
Does it have to be the desk, or can it be like your work area?
Oh, sure. It can be the whole work area.
Okay. How about that guy?
Tyler is pointing to a meerkat. I think it's a meerkat. It's like stuck to my lamp. It's like a little crocheted meerkat with a suit. It's a British suit, because this meerkat is from when we hosted the first royal wedding of William and Kate, whenever that was. It was pretty early on in the existence of Aperture, like 2010, maybe the year we open. There used to be a bride with it. This is just the groom. I don't know what happened to the bride. But yeah, I've had him since then. And we hosted the royal wedding. People wanted us to do that. So they got here at like 6 a.m. We had like it on the screens, and they dressed up, and we had tea, and it was really fun. And then, of course, because we did that one, then when Harry and Meghan got married, we had to do it again. But I think we're out of the royal wedding business now.
Good. Well, yeah, I've seen that thing for a long time, and I never knew where it came from.
Did you never really?
Yeah, never did.
Well, now you know. You can go get it on Etsy if you want. I'm sure they're still there.
Good deal.
But you need to tell people where they can like hear your podcast. You need to do all the self-promo that you can.
Yeah, good point. I am still active as a musician, and that's something that I don't mind. I'm learning to draw more and more attention to that as I can. And I hope it'll be a busy year in that regard. So all my original music is on the usual platforms, including Spotify. And I would probably encourage people to use Spotify for that.
You can also join your Patreon.
Yes, you can. And so
and get secret special stuff.
Yeah. My Patreon is now going to be relevant to the podcast as well as my music creations. But actually, I'm really glad you brought it back to this, because I didn't talk about this before, but so my podcast reached kind of the end of its lifespan for what it was, for the Red House podcast in particular. So I've recently, and will be announcing this week, that it'll be called Venture from now on. And yeah, so the podcast is going to shift to where it'll be a different kind of space and allow me to talk about some other things and explore other interests. So my Patreon will be able to support both the new Venture podcast as well as my creations as a musician. If you want to be a part of the Patreon, where I do release exclusive material, I think it's just patreon.com/TylerNail. And otherwise, all of my stuff is easy to find just with my name, Tyler Nail.
And you have a very distinct voice, and people should listen to you like right now when they're done listening to this podcast.
I hope they will.
Well, thanks, Tyler. We'll have you back again.
Thank you.
So I was able to come up with a song that I love from a film. I think it's a really underappreciated film and song. It's from the film Drive, starring Ryan Gosling and Carey Mulligan. And the song is called A Real Hero. And it's plays when Ryan's driving, obviously, because he's a driver in the film. And he's driving down the Los Angeles River. Carey's character's son is in her lap. And it's just this really happy moment between the three of them. I just think it's a catchy song, and it's one of those things where you can't imagine any other song now when you watch it being used. So that's my song. And I did a lot of research on the legality of playing music in podcasts, watched a lot of YouTube videos, went down some rabbit holes, and I can't find any clear answers. So erring on the side of caution, I'm not going to play a clip, but that does bring me to a good point. I did create a little website where I'm posting some of the photos of the items on my desk, just if you're curious of what they actually look like. So they're on the webpage. I'll put the clips from the two films that we talked about, and then anything else, bonus content, like you can find our original blog that we wrote. It's very amusing. So check it out. It's called whatsupwiththeslash.com. Very original.